This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Time and Room podcast, our brand new podcast all about lacrosse, featuring my pal Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington, and I love lacrosse. Dane grew up in Ohio. He played at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there, and after some stints coaching in D3 and the D1 level, is now the head coach at St. Andrew's in Potomac. Coach, how are you doing, my friend?
Week three. I didn't think we would make it, but...
They haven't canceled us yet.
No, exactly. So
here's the beauty of a podcast. They can never fire you.
Right.
Nobody can fire you.
My wife might beg to differ as I silo her upstairs and tell her to make sure she makes no noises and the dog is quiet. But
your wife might be able to fire you, for sure.
Yeah, I know.
For sure.
She definitely could, so...
We have a special guest, and we forgot last week to do it at the very beginning of the show, but someone that's been on the radio with me and the Junkies a few times, it's someone that Dane has gotten to know a little bit over the last year or two since one of Dane's players now plays for him, and that's Coach John Tillman at the University of Maryland. We're super excited to talk to Coach in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fired up. We can talk about it kind of all day, so... No, I got to know him, you know, pretty well through the process of Alex, you know, ended up playing there. He's going to be a senior there next year. I can't believe that. It's gone by quick. But so one of the best in the game, right? One of the best. And he's right down the road. And so I'm sure it'll be a great conversation. So,
I can't wait to hear from him and just get his insight and how he's dealing with all this. And we got a lot of great stuff that we want to ask him about. But first, you know, we always like to kick off the show with kind of what's going on in the world. And man, these last few weeks have been crazy. And Hopkins, they closed their search out. We've been talking about this for a couple weeks now. And boom, they made it official.
Made it official. And good thing there was no gambling or anything going on. I don't think we were on the right track. We thought we might have been on the right track with, and we weren't the only people with, you know, Hopkins alum being in the mix, but they went a different direction as they said they were going to do. And you kind of alluded to, and hired Cornell's head coach, Peter Milliman, and you know, made that official. I think there was a press conference today, and so that's interesting. I mean, it's obviously, you know, he's been very successful there, and he's, you know, gone the hard way, D2, D3, and so we'll see how it goes.
He's done a great job at Cornell, right? Kind of like revitalizing that program.
He has, and I think he was a head coach for 1 year under an interim tag when Coach Kerwick stepped away, and then he filled that full-time role and continued to be successful. And, you know, they just missed the NCAA tournament last year, and I think they were like the last team out. And, but they were 5-0 and second in the country this year before, you know, everything happened with the pandemic and everything like that. So,
right.
And he had Jeff Teat, one of the best players in the country, and probably the academic profile too of the school. I mean, you're recruiting to an Ivy League, which is not easy. And now you're recruiting to Hopkins, which might be a little easier. I'm not sure. I had never recruited to either, but the academic standards are somewhat similar. So he's used to navigating that, but he's probably going to have a little bit more flexibility at Hopkins, I'd imagine, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I don't know their standards.
It's kind of an interesting move, and just, you know, I'm not an insider, but I mean, Cornell's a great program.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't want to say it's a lateral move, but it kind of is a lateral move where Cornell is right now. Right. I mean, obviously Hopkins has that tradition, but so does Cornell.
Yeah, no, Cornell is, I think you're in a lot of ways right. I think the Big Ten, the Ivy League are two of the best conferences. I mean, you would say that the Ivy League was the best conference in the country this past year before the season ended. I mean, how many teams did they have ranked in the top 10? And, but I think, you know, I have to imagine, you know, coaching at an Ivy League school, there's a lot of barriers and you got to be creative and find ways and find the right guys, and the pool of kids you can pick from are less. And I mean,
sounds like the same issues that they were having at Hopkins though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Similar.
But, yeah. But playing in the Big Ten is, I don't know. I think that's big time. That's a Power Five conference, the money the schools have, shared revenue, all that kind of stuff. Big Ten network. I mean, I think that stuff interests coaches, and he's replacing like a legend. I feel like that's got to get you a little bit pumped up, a little psyched, right?
For sure. But don't you also think though that, I mean, I've been talking to a buddy about this, you know, in the last 6 months or so, but I mean, the Ivy Leagues, especially with like what Yale's been doing lately and everything, like they're really coming on.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
they're doing a great job of recruiting. The level of play there is just outstanding.
Yeah, I think Yale a couple of years ago really kind of set the standard and set the bar to what you could do in the Ivy League. And, you know, everyone has kind of followed suit and they've kind of raised the profile. And I mean, you look at UPenn, you know, Coach Tillman coming on, they played them one goal game and they were right in the mix. You know, this season plays out, you know, Final Four predictions and Cornell. And so. Yeah, no, I mean, lacrosse, there's a lot more parity, though, too. So you could say that about, you know, other conferences as well. You look at the Big Ten, the ACC, obviously. And so, you know, I'm sure he'll do a great job. It was interesting reading the article today just about, you know, what his thought process of taking the job was. And just, you know, he's like, I'm excited to learn about Hopkins. Right. He was like really candid. He's like, I don't know that much.
Right.
You know, I learned a lot through the interview process, but I'm really excited to get to know the school. And so that's definitely not something an alumni would have said. It would have been like, I know this place. And so we'll see where it goes. And but then, you know, we're wrong on, you know, the Cornell coach going there. And this is the first time I've ever been wrong. But and then we thought,
welcome to the club. I'm wrong all the time.
I know. Right. But it's still fun playing the game. And then we thought, you know, the coaching carousel would just go crazy. We were just prepared. We were with topics for 6 weeks to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just said they already hired a coach at Cornell.
Right. They hired Busick, right? Who's like 27, 28 years old.
He's
still a monster playing professionally.
Yeah. No, he is. I don't know if you saw that. You know, it's not really relevant, but he dislocated his shoulder last summer. You saw that clip and then threw it back in. And look, if I'm a player and I see that, I want to play for that guy.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, that's sweet. But I read into it a little bit more. There's a hiring freeze at Cornell.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they really had a choice.
Uh-huh.
Not to say that they wouldn't have chosen him anyways. He's young, but there's no reason he can't do a good job. No reason at all.
Stud anytime player. You're an interim coach like that, I mean, it's your job to lose, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, this is it. So you get a year and you go for it. You know, just hope we get some lacrosse out there to get back after it. Now, there's a lot going on. Sowers also made some news this week.
Yeah, choosing Duke, right? That's that makes sense. I mean, from an academic standpoint, and obviously, you know, Coach Chudnowski and what he does down there is phenomenal. So it's going to be a great fit. I was looking at their roster. I think their leading scorer was a freshman, a Canadian kid out of Ontario, like 24 goals. Like, and then you look at how many seniors they had, and I don't know how many kids have decided they're going to come back, what Duke is doing as a university to give those kids a chance to come back. But I mean, you're going to have some super teams. I mean, it's going to be, as much as it sucks to not have lacrosse right now.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine how exciting next season is going to be? It's going to be nuts.
Guys are just loading up.
I mean, Syracuse has had a bunch of people come back.
Yeah.
You know, Duke has a lot of good, great seniors, obviously, and they haven't made their decision on if they'll be able to come back. And, you know, we're going to have Coach Tillman on. I'm sure we won't talk about it too much, but, you know, he's getting the same situation. He's got great seniors and, you know, will they come back? Will they not? Will some come back? And then you add transfers into the mix and then you have, I mean, it's a show.
He'll have a full roster. We know that.
Right. And that bleeds into the other side we talked about a couple weeks ago is this recruiting stuff. It's great for these. It's a good problem to have when you're looking at your roster as a college coach. You're like, man, this is, you know, it's almost like you don't have an all-star team, but you do in some cases where you're bringing a Sowers in who plays like Jordan Wolf, who Duke used to have. You plug and play him. And then you have Brendan O'Neill, who's in the class of 2020. I watched his highlight before we got on here and I'm like, I can't believe this kid's in high school at St. Anthony's.
Did he commit like in eighth grade or something? He was one of those really early commits. I thought it was the Penn State initially, right?
You know, actually, you're right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. And then once the September 1st rules, he, you know, obviously, you know, was getting recruited throughout that process. And Duke does a great job with Long Island kids. And, you know, Danowski's a Long Island guy. And so he's from St. Anthony's. And I mean, I don't know what their left-handed attackman spot looks like, but I would imagine that kid finds a way on the field as well. So, yeah, so it's going to be crazy. But it leaks down to high school. You know, I just got some I was telling you earlier, you know, talking to a buddy about at the college level, like, what are coaches thinking? And I want to talk to Coach Tillman about this too. Like, what mm-hmm. – and everyone might be doing it differently, but
– because you have a couple 21s that need a home. You have a couple 21s that need a home.
Yeah,
you
I'm know? Not going to share their highlights right now, but yeah, no, we definitely do, and we're working hard to find them homes, and they're great players. But I think that's where the college coaches, you know, just reading a couple of texts, is just those guys are crunched. They have to wait and see. You know, they have to see if they're going to have money. They also, not only with the seniors that are coming back, but they want to wait and see, what about the juniors and sophomores? What if they all decide they want to come back? What if a sophomore class rallies together and says, let's, you know, let's all come back, and then that really puts the pinch on 21. So a little bit of a wait and see, but we're all in a wait and see. We're in a wait and see to, if we're going to have summer lacrosse, we're going to wait and see if we're going to be in school next fall. Or
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk to a legend, John Tillman, the current coach at the University of Maryland. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Welcome back. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest today. Dane, he's been to 7 Final Fours. We all know he won the national championship in 2017. He's had 53 All-Americans at Maryland, 36 players drafted in the MLL. The PLL Whipsnakes won the inaugural PLL title last year, comprised of something like 17 former Terrapins. As a program, the Terps last year advanced to the NCAA tournament for the 17th straight year, and it certainly would have been an 18th and another crack at another national title if it weren't for the current COVID-19 crisis. That is none other than the legendary head coach at the University of Maryland, John Tillman. Coach, thanks for joining us.
That was a mouthful there, Eric.
How about that, Coach? What a resume.
A lot of good players make you seem a lot smarter, I can tell you that much. We've had some good players and coaches, so I'm thankful for that.
So how are you dealing with all this right now? I mean, what do you miss the most? I think I know the answer, and I know Dane, I know what he misses. What do you miss the most right now?
Yeah, we're in the people business, so you miss the people. I miss being around the guys, my staff, even the people I work with. You know, this year 10 for me, so developed some great relationships, you know, in our department and obviously with our players. And, you know, today I listened to, there's a podcast with Kathy Reese, and I listened to that, and she's right next door to me. I talked to her on Friday, so I miss seeing her, and she's – so smart. I learned a lot from her, but she's a great friend, and her husband Brian's a Terp. So, you know, I miss seeing them. I miss so much of just being at Maryland, but I also understand we're doing what we're doing for a reason, and I got to do my part.
How was it, Coach, as this kind of came down and kind of came crashing down pretty fast in the sports world? When did it sort of dawn on you that, wow, this really could impact us? And then kind of talk us through how that played out for you guys.
I think when it hit, I think I was talking to Kevin Warren, the Georgetown lacrosse coach, and it was a night that the NBA got canceled.
Right.
Postponed, I should say. And, you know, Kev was like, man, I just heard that the NBA is postponed. And at that point, I think that might have been like Tuesday or Wednesday of the week. Everything kind of got shut down. And I felt like the NBA was – the night before a lot of those NCAA basketball tournaments. And then we all were like, okay, this is not good. These are pros.
Right.
And, you know, if anybody's going to work through this, it would be professionals, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, we're amateurs. We're dealing with student athletes. We're going to be even more careful. So next day, I think there were a lot of the tournaments on, and a bunch of us have TVs in our offices. So once the news started breaking about the tournaments, you know, being canceled, I think people started to turn on the televisions, and you were seeing, you know, whether it was, you know, the SEC, you know, the ACC, whatever it may be. Once those started, the basketball tournaments stopped, you knew it was serious, because we all realize those are revenue sports. There's a lot at stake with, you know, television viewership and advertisements and big contracts, right? We're non-revenue sports, so we understand that. So you could connect the dots there for sure.
I was trying to still hold out hope for high school because there was a trickle-down effect, but we were kind of the last to move on it just because it was more localized. That was the hope that we were all trying to hang on to, was the localization of, we don't have to go anywhere, we don't have to travel. And we talked about, Eric and I talked about it a couple weeks ago. I don't know how it was for you, but I mean, I cried when I told my team, and I'm coaching high school. I don't have the resume that you have, but still the relationship piece and having to look at those kids and tell them, you know, this is it. And for me, I didn't really know. And
you didn't think that at first, right, Coach? I mean, you thought, okay, this will be a few weeks, but then we'll all get back into it.
Yeah, I guess I was naive, or maybe I, you know, didn't watch the news enough or whatever it may be. And just even now, I mean, they haven't canceled our season, although we know we're not going to, you know, likely go back to school. I still think there is something to be said about hope and what that can do for, you know, your motivation, everything like that. So I tried to be positive with our guys, but they could see it in my face that was tough. Now, this is high school. Those kids invest a lot, but they, you know, coach has got, you know, 45 guys that give him everything, you know, multiple hours a day since the beginning of September. So I can't even imagine what that was like.
I think if you're part of a team and you have those relationships, it's all the same. I think for all of us, you know, you got young people that are very passionate about, you know, something, and they're connected as a group and they have those strong relationships, they care about each other. At that age, it is really important. You know, you're not talking about a group that's, you know, got a full-time job and a house and a mortgage and kids. You're talking about, you know, young people, you know, this is where they are in life, right? You know, their education, their families, this is a passion of theirs. It's not the priority, but it is something that they just love to do. And it's connected. A big portion of that is doing it with their friends, you know? Yeah. So it's all interconnected, and you take all that away, there's definitely an empty feeling.
How have you been able to stay connected? I know everyone's doing Zoom meetings and all that, and my daughter's a volleyball player, and she's leading a yoga class for her volleyball club
That's awesome.
But and I know guys are doing that all over the country. What have you guys been doing?
Yeah, we've on a bigger scale, we've done Tuesday and Thursday Zoom sessions, usually at 4:30. We kind of played around with some things. It took us a couple of weeks to kind of get a sense of what we wanted to do and where the guys were at. And we went on spring break, and then they wanted another break before we got going. So once we got back, we wanted a week for the guys to just get a sense of how this online, you know, teaching was going to work. So we didn't want any distractions with that. So we really made the first week, the focus was academics. And then we started brainstorming. We talked to a number of our players and started thinking about what do we want to do? We have a long time before we play again. So it doesn't have to necessarily be anything in terms of skill and things like that. And we kind of felt like, all right, there's a void with the guys. Let's get them together. And let's try to find some things that maybe would be different. And so we've tried to incorporate some guest speakers, just some different people that we knew, and maybe some things that the guys can learn about teams and team building, and maybe some great players, some things that they've done. So something that would connect them a little bit, but also, you know, some things they can take with them. And I think it's worked so far. It seems like the feedback has been pretty good. So we've kind of kept that going. We've had a former assistant, Chris Mattis, who's now with the Patriots. He spoke to spoke to the guys, I think, 2 weeks ago. We have one of our alums who's now a Navy SEAL, kind of spoke to him about what he's doing and how lacrosse is related to what he does now and the importance of how you do your business, things that you learn within a team, how to be a good teammate. You know, Craig Fitzgerald, one of our former football players who then became at Maryland and then became the strength coach for the lacrosse team, a guy that when I was at Harvard was our head strength coach. He's going on to be with, at the Division I level for football. He's been with Steve Spurrier with South Carolina. He's been with Bill O'Brien at Penn State. He was at Tennessee last year. He was with the Houston Texans. He's now with the New York Giants. So a guy who's been around great athletes, right? A lot of successful programs, but he's a Terp. So it was awesome. He told some good stories about when he was a Terp to kind of keep the guys entertained. But also, you know, when you're working with guys like Deshaun Watson, you're saying, hey, here are some things that, you know, that he does, his approach to things. If you're a young guy, how could you not pick up on those things? So I think it's been good. It's given our guys two real, like, times of the week that they can look forward to seeing everybody, connecting with everybody. And we don't a lot of times telling them who's coming up. So there's a little bit of, you know, surprise, element of surprise. So, again, we're doing our best. It, you know, is it perfect? No. But we really didn't want it to be about, you know, lacrosse. I think they need more than that right now.
How do you see this playing out then? You say, you know, we're not going to be there for a long time. I mean, nobody knows. I know you don't know. I know you're not a doctor and, you know, you're not an epidemiologist or anything. But how do you – what is your best guess on how – when you can get guys back out there?
We'll have a Zoom tomorrow with all the head coaches at Maryland and Damon Evans and our administration. So they've been great. Damon's, you know, obviously been a tough time, but he's given us good direction so far. You know, we have those – every Wednesday we get a little bit of an update. You know, I feel like we're making progress nationally in terms of, you know, doing the best we can, making sure we don't overrun our medical care and, you know, obviously the hospitals. So we're trying to make sure we protect those, you know, around us. So I think overall, you know, we've done a decent job. Certainly there's been some cases that maybe could be better, but I think it's now, you know, the experts in the medical field and, you know, those that, you know, deal with, you know, vaccines and things like that. It's, you know, it's right now it's a big race, whether it's here or in other countries, to try to figure out, you know, how do we deal with if we ever decide to move things forward. You know, you keep hearing about, well, what happens if now all of a sudden we have a second wave here? I think we've got to find that sweet spot between, all right, we're going to move forward, but also we can't take a step back. And then if we do, this thing kind of boils up again, what are we going to do to counter that? And I don't think anybody has the answers. You know, I think we're prepared for a lot of different things. I think everybody keeps talking about, can we come back in the fall? And I don't think anybody's quite sure yet. There's been talk of starting late and start maybe midway in terms of being on campus and starting kind of now, like we are, you know, just kind of doing it through the computers. Football, I think everybody, boy, that if we could get it right and somehow get football back involved, it's such a big part of our you know, society and the culture of America. I mean, what a big shot in the arm if we could do that in a healthy way, but only in a healthy way. So I wish I had more answers for you. I think what we've tried to do is just brace ourselves for, you know, best case, worst case, and prepare for the worst, which could be, you know, midway through next semester or missing the whole fall, which creates an unknown for us. Okay, we're going to get to, you know, hopefully get together at the beginning of January if all goes well, which in some cases people might still think is being a little aggressive. But for the first time, I think for any coach out there, no fall lacrosse at the Division I level, and you're trying to put your team together and make a run at this thing.
Oh, what a mess.
Yeah, I mean, it's – yeah, that's none of us know the answers. But I think it's funny you talked about preparing for the best and worst. And before, like, you got on here, Eric and I were talking about what we're going to try to do. Again, everything we're doing is a much smaller scale. But it's the same thing of trying to prepare for what happens if we come back July 1. What if we can gather with 20 kids on July 1 and 40 kids on August 1st? And so as a coaching staff, like, what are you guys doing? Because you have summer recruiting coming up. You have – obviously 21s, not to get into detail, you have people that you're trying to get to campus. So how are you guys navigating that? You know, I'm sure trying to prepare for all different scenarios, but I know on our minds, the recruiting piece is big and what that looks like for our high school kids and how you guys are kind of trying to navigate the unknown.
Yeah, I think we're prepared for no recruiting this summer. And maybe that starts in the fall. I think everybody's hopeful that, you know, if we can get some in, that would be great. You know, being realistic in that if somebody does hold an event, you know, and again, I don't know how you'd prove it, but all of a sudden, if there's another breakout of people who've been in an event, you know, are you liable there? Do you really want to go down that road? That's why I don't think you'll see a lot of colleges hosting any events. I think everything will have to be off campus because I don't think any college wants to deal with that. And I think that's from what I've heard from a number of coaches, everything that we do would have to be somewhere else. So we're prepared to do that, you know, if it seems prudent and, you know, we get the guidance from our states and obviously our government and feel like that's something we could do, we would pursue it. I think all college coaches would. I think, again, we're bracing for anything that does happen, but also realistic enough to know that we may just have to be patient on this thing.
Will you ever recruit a kid just based on video?
It would be more than video. I mean, certainly for the visual part, you'd want to see the video. I think what it would depend upon is, you know, what do you watch and then what else can you find out? I think most coaches won't watch a video and make a decision because you're really not just making a decision on talent. You're really making a decision about the whole person and the student. So, you know, you would look at the video. And then, you know, you'd start probably asking some questions, call some people, you know, what type of young man are we talking about? Let's look at grades and let's really find out more, you know, probably not too different than the NFL draft. You know, it's not just what you see. Yeah, that's great. He's fast. But, you know, is he a guy that does the right things? Is he, you know, a team first guy? Is he a good leader? Does he have high character? Does he like to compete? I think those are all things that coaches want to know, but you could certainly use that as a serious tool. And that could definitely, you know, get you more interested for sure.
Right. How do you deal with the 21s? I'm sorry, Dane. How do you deal with the 21s? I know Dane's got a couple 21s. Coaches all around the country at 21s are getting squeezed here a little bit because of the extra year that's been granted. And you guys, most coaches have no idea who's coming back and who's not. How do these 21s going to get recruited?
Well, I think a couple things, right? When I think the NCAA had just, I think their empathy was great, right? They saw some young people lose an opportunity and, you know, they felt for them and you can appreciate that side of it. Having done, you know, 3 weeks of conversations and homework with people, you know, we thought maybe they would just say, listen, given the circumstances, we're sorry, but everybody's struggling right now. And maybe that would be it for the seniors. And then we'd start over again. You know, obviously feeling for my guys and the kids I care about and some of the other kids I know from other programs, you'd hate to see the seniors lose that opportunity. Maybe a concession would have been the seniors get potentially another year if they want to choose it and it works with their family and their academics and their future jobs. And that would have created a lot fewer problems. And I think right now we're talking about 7 years of repercussions from what happened because, you know, you have four classes now, your seniors, but then everybody that was on your roster last year is eligible for another year. Obviously without considering all the other factors I just mentioned. So that's 4 years, but to your point, you know, you have seniors coming in that have not, and especially up here, a lot of them did not play a meaningful game, this year. So you're talking about guys that haven't played a meaningful year, you know, for, you know, maybe 18 months or so, you know, going into college. So that's putting those kids in a really tough spot. And now the group of guys they're going against, if a number come back, a number of those seniors come back, you're talking about the oldest group of seniors we've ever seen. So you're giving them less ammunition going in and you're giving them a harder level of competition to go against. So, not only are the 20s, those seniors and rising freshmen, struggling now, the 21s, you know, like for them, some kids are committed, some aren't. And then if some of the 20s decide to reclass or go back based on knowing that some of the freshmen were going to get another year, yes, that'll trickle down to the 21s. It'll trickle down to the 22s. It could trickle down to the 23s. So we've inherited all types of issues. I do think, you know, the goal for all coaches in any sport is, you know, if there's good players, our job is to find them. And that's the one thing I would tell any player, like, listen, your job, you know, as a young guy is to try to find, and maybe not job, but one of the things you're trying to do is find a home. Well, you know, our job as college coaches is to try to find the best young people we can find to add to our lacrosse program and our school's community. So that's not changing. We're just doing it differently. So it may be different, but we're still doing our jobs. It's just more unconventional. It may require some more patience. It may go back to kind of the way it was, you know, back as an old guy in the 80s. People weren't making decisions till senior year. So maybe it goes back to that. And if it takes a little longer, but you're finding the right place, that might not be the worst thing. It creates a longer, you know, a longer path in terms of, you know, how long it takes to get there. But maybe, you know, that isn't such a bad thing, because we've already seen what happens when guys make early decisions. I just felt like when guys are making decisions as eighth graders and freshmen, I'm not sure it worked out very well.
Oh, that was crazy. Yeah. Just crazy. Well,
I can't even imagine. I mean, you mentioned like the squeeze it's putting on, and as a college coach, the process that you have to go through, I'm sure, at Maryland, and how they're going to handle the squeeze, both with scholarships and support and budgeting and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, even your seniors, how are you kind of navigating with them? Because I'm sure you have great relationships with those guys, and every guy's situation is different. You know, do I come back? Do I go to graduate school? Do I, you know, every situation looks different, but I'm sure as a head coach and a mentor to those guys, you have to kind of help guide them a little bit.
Yeah. And I think what's tough with the way things went down, right? It happened so late this year. We're talking, you know, March of your senior year. A lot of guys have jobs, right? A lot of guys are pretty far down the road in terms of graduating and, you know, what's going on next. It's not, you know, you're not talking about an ideal spot to all of a sudden decide, okay, I'm going to go to grad school at your university and do a 180. And, you know, we're at a state university. So if you're in state, you know, obviously there are some benefits, cost benefits there. But if you look at graduate programs, most graduate programs, I don't care where you're looking, there's a big jump. And so not a lot of people have budgeted for grad school, you know, just to play another year of their sport, whether it's lacrosse or baseball or softball. You got to have the grades. You know, in some cases, you got to have the standardized test scores, GRE, GMATs, things like that. And then families have to just make a decision. All right, do we want to pursue that? And some guys, you know, they may not be able to get in. So there's so many things that need to go into it. That's why it's not as easy as, hey, you got the extra year. I think for the juniors and sophomores and freshmen, you're a little farther off, and you could pursue potentially a grad year, or you could pursue a double major, you know, or a minor or things like that. And there's a lot more options when you're talking about staying as an undergrad than you are as a grad student. Because I've started looking at some of the numbers nationally. If you want to go to grad school, grad schools aren't cheap.
Right. No doubt about
it. My head is spinning by the just the effects of everything that you have to think about, and, you know, all our athletes have to think about too. So
let's talk about something a little more positive, though. I want to talk about the coach's sort of travels and how he got to Maryland, and really want to focus a little bit on that championship year in 2017. That was so exciting. So, you know, we don't have to do too much, but, you know, you played at you started at Colgate, right?
And Cornell.
Then I thought he started at Colgate, right? And then you transferred to Cornell. Is that right? Weren't you a goalie and then you moved?
Oh, wow.
Right.
Yeah.
So talk about that a little bit. Yeah.
You know, I was a guy that, you know, I talked to kids all the time about, you know, making their decisions and think, I think for me, small town guy, probably wasn't ready and mature enough at 18 to be ready for college. I did fine. I got through it, but I think an extra year would have been great for me. You know, I was in a small town. I had an awesome family and a great place to grow up. Hadn't been exposed to a whole lot. So freshman year was a big jump for me. And I think that extra year would have been great for me. You know, did 1 year at Colgate and certainly appreciated the friends I made there and the experience I had. came a little bit closer to home at Cornell, and enjoyed my 3 years there, and learned a lot. You know, had some awesome coaches, and still close with a number of my teammates. We actually have a Cornell group text that we've been We've done a couple Zooms with them, and that's been a lot of fun. I think a lot of people will tell you that, you know, the pandemic has reconnected a lot of people, whether it's high school groups or social groups or college groups, whatever it may be. It's so easy to be able to do that. You know, although you can't, you're not getting your daily life, you've been able to do some things and connect with some people maybe you wouldn't have in the past. Yeah. So that's kind of neat.
Silver lining to it all. And then, of course, you start out at Ithaca, right? As an assistant. Yep. Right down the street, right? Not far at all. And you do that for a few years. What was that experience like? And then how did that bring you to Navy, which was next?
Yeah, you know, real fortunate. Was able to stay in the town and worked for a great guy named Jeff Long, who was one of the best players to ever play lacrosse and made a couple world teams. I think for a while was the all-time leading scorer at Navy. Just a great guy and a guy that's been a big mentor and had a big influence on my life just as a leader, a person, just the way he treated people. You know, was demanding but compassionate and empathetic, but also a guy that, you know, would do anything for you. So certainly learned a lot from him. Had a great 4 years there, met a lot of great people. We had some great success there. And then the Navy job opened up and, you know, spent 12 years there and live back in Annapolis now. So thankful for that opportunity. And that helped shape me a lot. And whether it was, you know, what I learned from Coach Meade, who's one of the all-time greats, but also just what you learn from a service academy day in, day out, the core values there, what that place stands for. Hard not to rub off on you.
Yeah. Did you bring a lot of that to Maryland?
Yeah, I think anywhere you go, you're going to take a little bit of wherever you are with you. And you're going to take a little bit of the people that you worked with, whether, you know, your fellow assistants or, you know, their head coaches, or they're just people that you work with, you know, whether it's your bosses. I think that's something I learned a long time ago is you can learn from anybody. And not being the greatest player, I always felt like I could pick up something from everybody. So never really felt like I was so good that I didn't have to listen. So I feel that way with my kids even now, you know, with some of our players, you know, I can learn from them and pick up some things. And not only like in terms of the game, but also the way they think. And I think relating to young people is really important. And the way they've been brought up is a lot different than we have. But that doesn't make them better, worse, you know, or anything else. It's just, this is the way they've grown up. And, you know, we joke a lot. We grew up with teddy bears and blankets, grew up with a phone. And you know, who wouldn't think that maybe we'd be a lot like, the young people today, if we grew up the same way, we probably would.
Right.
But we're all in this together. We all have common goals. The better we can relate to each other, the better I can connect with them and they can connect with me, the more successful we're going to be. So this can't be about they better do things the way I want and do things the way I want. We better all try to figure out how we can maximize our communication and maximize what we're going to do together. And to me, that means being flexible. And I think it's really important.
Now, I don't want to gloss over Harvard, because before we get into the Maryland deal, so you were at Harvard for 3 years. What was that like? And how did that prepare you for the next gig?
Yeah, you got to start somewhere. And I'd be lying if I told you that, you know, I went in and it was perfect. I think any head coach will tell you, and I said this to somebody else, Seth Tierney, who's the coach at Hofstra now. I remember him telling me when I got the job, he's like, your head's going to be spinning for a year or two. And he was spot on. I learned a lot from Coach Meade at the Naval Academy, and he gave me a lot of responsibility, but until you're in the chair, there are just so many things that as an assistant, you just don't have to take care of, even though you have a lot on your plate. And a lot of them are not lacrosse related. And you're juggling a lot. People are constantly coming to you. Luckily for me, you know, Kevin Warren, who's now the head coach at Georgetown, is a terrific coach. You know, he was at UMBC. He came up with me, and that was huge for me because he was a guy that had done a lot at UMBC, had a lot of responsibility, tremendous defensive coach, and kind of felt like I didn't need to do a lot down there because Kev could take care of that. And that was huge. So really felt like, you know, that part was taken care of. Anthony Kelly, who is one of the best, you know, indoor and outdoor lacrosse players around, he came up, and Anthony was awesome. Just a very passionate guy, a guy that, you know, seemed to play forever. A big athletic guy, but passionate, great with kids, learned a lot from him. And we went on this journey to, all right, first year, let's see what we can do. Obviously, maybe the most prestigious and well-known school in the world. So what an amazing opportunity just to walk those grounds and be on that campus and met some awesome people, worked with some really good kids. And it wasn't perfect, but I feel like, you know, the 3 years there, we were able to accomplish a good amount. I think we beat Princeton for the first time in 20 years. And, you know, we were able to get a win over Duke in one of those 3 years. I think 1 year they beat us up pretty good. But, you know, we had some success, and not just on the field, but I think we had some success culturally, and just, again, success helping those kids, you know, get ready for what's beyond them, which is really the most important thing we do. But learned a lot there. Would not have been successful at Maryland without that stop at Harvard, because I would have made way too many mistakes, and that was a pretty big jump. And so the Harvard experience was great, and I'm thankful for Bob Scalise, who's the AD, who will be retiring. But, you know, he took a shot on me, and I was an unproven assistant coach. So without that opportunity, I don't get to Maryland, and I love where I'm at.
Talk about that jump, because – I have to note that Anthony Kelly was my high school coach, so I would agree that he does develop good, hopefully good young men. That was before his stuff at Harvard. But you make that jump, and obviously, I mean, any Division I job, there's pressure. You know what I mean? There's pressure anywhere, and I'm sure you put more pressure on yourself to be successful than maybe any university or alumni can do. But, you know, Eric's a Maryland alum. He knows, you know, you grew up in this area. I didn't. But to take that job, that's not just any job. That's a job where, you know, everyone, you know, it's a state sport. Everyone is all in, and which is a good thing. But what was that like as a coach? And, you know, obviously, what was that like to experience that?
Yeah. And as a guy, it's funny, Kevin Warren, you know, reminds me of this all the time when I was doing the interviews to try to hire Kevin at Harvard. I'd been on the job for a couple of weeks. He asked me, he goes, "What's your dream job?" And I said, "Well, Harvard is, you know." And he's like, "No, you know, any job, pick a job. And, you know, you could live anywhere, do anything." And I was pretty invested at Harvard at the time, right? So that's basically all I could see. But, you know, we did, you know, joke around a little bit. But I obviously loved living down in Maryland, spent 12 years living in Annapolis. So grew fond of the area, had a lot of strong relationships and down here. So there was something about Maryland that just really resonated with me. Just loved the tradition, the people that I'd met, the guys that had played there. Always there was something about it. I remember going to a Maryland Navy game as a kid and in Bird Stadium. And I was like, man, this is awesome. And I guess that part never left me. When that job became available, you know, it was a hard decision because I was so emotionally invested in our players and Harvard. I just couldn't really see anything else. But had some conversations with people and some alums and also Kevin Plank, and it just seemed like too good of an opportunity to turn down. And you're right, you know, Dane, you look at the prior coach was a guy that I respected a lot and still do, Dave Cottle. You know, Dave had been there and had a lot of success. He had been in the quarterfinals. He's one of the best lacrosse coaches. Even to this day, he's one of the best coaches out there. So you're staring down, you know, following a great coach who followed a great coach who followed a great coach. So, right. You know, they tell you not to do that. So you don't want to follow the man, you know, you don't want to be the man who follows the man. So I think what was fortunate for me and the big reason I think why we've had success is that I was able to talk to the last 3-4 head coaches and take what I could from them. And that helped me be successful because, you know, Coach Cottle was very generous. He was awesome. You know, he was always willing to listen to me on the phone. And same with Dick Adele and Dino Matisich, you know, Coach Beardmore. So all of those guys, I was able to pick their brain. So it wasn't like I was just walking into a new place. I was, you know, kind of extrapolating the knowledge of all these guys and what they felt like worked at Maryland and what the place meant and what the strengths were and, you know, things like that. So that information was huge and was able to maintain Ryan Moran, who was on the staff. And then obviously Kevin, I had worked with. So I loved our staff coming in. Coach Cottle and his staff, Coach Lefkowski and Ryan Moran left us a very good group. Normally when you take over a job, there's a reason and, you know, you got to rebuild the roster. I didn't have to do that. I had to do a little tweaking, but, you know, again, that's a credit to those guys. So we had a chance to be successful immediately. And it was just a matter of, you know, could we get in and do it quickly? Because it usually takes a little bit of adjustment time. But in fairness to those seniors, we felt like we couldn't map out a four-year plan. Like we had to make this thing try to work right away. So we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to do it. It wasn't perfect at times, but man, we had some great kids that were really motivated and really talented.
I remember some of those kids. I'm looking at the roster now. I remember the goalie, right? Nico Amato. You had a Bernhardt on the roster, right?
Yeah, a couple of them.
Talk about just some of the guys, the standouts you remember from those first couple years.
Yeah, I think for the seniors, you know, they kept getting to the quarterfinals, and the quarterfinals, like, that's the hardest game.
You know
what's at stake when you're at the quarterfinals. You get there, and it's like, okay, if you want to get to championship weekend, which is every guy's dream, you know, every guy in your program, and it's great for your university to be part of that Memorial Day weekend. Everybody kind of knows what you're building to, so it's a tough game to play. Like, there are no easy games, and there aren't any really easy games anymore because it's getting so competitive. But you know, even going back 10 years. Those quarterfinals were super, super tough. And, you know, the goal was really to try to get better, you know, every single day. And it sounds like that old coach's cliche, but we were like, listen, we understand where you guys have been. The only way we're going to do this is trying to get a little bit better every day. And we literally looked at it like just day by day, drill by drill, segment by segment. And we really didn't talk about, hey, we want to go to the Final Four. We just felt like that was wasted energy. But we knew those guys were hungry, and they were willing to do just about anything. So again, you had a motivated group and a talented group. You know, guys like Brian Farrell, who's now the head coach at Boys Latin, and you know, Brian Phipps was on our staff. He's now over at Archbishop Spalding. Ryan Young, you know, another great player. We had a Danny Burns, who ended up making the USA team. Brett Schmidt, a Ryder Bolander. I mean, we had a really good roster of kids. You know, Drew Snyder, John Hawes, Jake Bernhardt. So it was
it's unbelievable.
Really
yeah, some of those guys are still playing. I mean, at a really high level.
Yeah, and that's why, like, you know, again, you know, it wasn't just us coming down there. You know, there were so many good players in place. So that's why I'm thankful, and I think there's a lot of credit that deserves to go to that staff before us. A part of it was, how can we get everybody on the same page so quickly? The other thing was, we had 17 seniors, and that is a lot of seniors, and that's a hard thing to navigate, because when you have 17 guys in the last season, everybody knows this is their last go, and there's a high sense of sensitivity to, listen, my last year, I really want to get on the field. So navigating a group that, yeah, we want to win, but also, hey, you know, coach, this is my last year. But we also felt like it was fair to give everybody a chance. And, you know, we had tryouts and everybody was going to earn what they got. And, you know, we were just going to do the best we could with it. So had a lot of support. Our administration's always been great with us. And our fans are awesome. And I think that's something that you can't walk in Maryland Stadium and not feel that support and how important it is. And it's hard to not have that get you excited every day when you wake up in the morning, knowing how much it means to everybody.
Where did Be the Best come from, Coach? Where'd that start?
Yeah, that's a Coach Beardmore 1970s. Wow. You know, that started back then. And really, it's something that I think everybody has said that since. You know, it's, you know, be the best version of you, you know, be, and for us, it's be the best person, student, and player you can be. It is something we say in huddles. It's something that we have on our walls. It's something we sell to recruits, and it is asking a lot, and it kind of make the recruits pause a little bit, because, you know, it's just not being the best player you can be. Like, you need to go to class. Like, you need to turn things in. You need to be somebody that does community service. You need to try to make a difference on campus and in your communities. Like, you, that's got to be important to you. If not, you're really not trying to be your best. You're just trying to do what's best for you. So you need to find people that want to make an impact and want to think outside themselves. And some people are wired that way. Some people aren't. I feel like, and I'm sure you guys agree, you know, the more you impact others, the more enriched your life, the better your life is. You just, you know, you're so thankful for all the things we have. How can we not give back? And you know, usually you give back and it's a Sunday and it's like, man, this is our day off. Oh man, we're going to do this. You know, you're a young guy and you're like, man, this was our day off. And then you go and you're going somewhere and you're meeting some new people or some young people or some people that are less fortunate than you. And you can't wait to come back again, you know? And it's, again, it's a reminder of us how great we have it. And, a lot of people did that for us when we were young. And it's always important to return that.
It's incredible. And I think too, like, be the best. I didn't even realize it started that long ago. I thought it was something that you had maybe pulled in, but obviously you had success early, sustained the success. And Eric, I know you want to touch on the national championship. You're mm-hmm. a Terp. It gets you excited. Me too. Yeah. I mean, obviously with having one of my players there now, I feel like I'm a Terp at heart in some ways, but just talk about, before we get into that, just the sustaining success from a culture standpoint. Eric, you know, can tell you, just, I mean, for me, that's like the biggest thing. And I know coaches talk about it all the time. Culture is not static. It's dynamic. It's ever changing. But I feel like the hardest thing to do is to sustain success, especially after you've had it. So, I mean, you've touched on some of the things, character and things like that, but I would love to kind of dive in and hear what it is that you guys do, because obviously something's working.
Yeah, I think, you know, we do a lot of studying of film, but we do a lot of studying of, you know, successful organizations. So we do a lot of reading. I wish I had more time in the day to kind of dive into some of the books that we have. And, you know, to me, we always joke about with our guys trying to be lifelong learners and always trying to improve yourself. And I think finding successful teams and organizations is fascinating, you know, like, you know, and you're always searching for that nugget, you know, what are they doing? What are they saying? And even if it's something similar to what you're doing, if they say it in a better way, in a more efficient way, or in a way the kids can relate to, it's worth grabbing that nugget. But I think part of it is, you know, what we're doing on the field, but a lot of it's mindset. So, you know, programs, people always ask, like, you know, what groups do you study? I think really, you know, Kevin Warren and I think he was a big Alabama fan when we went up to Harvard. So that was kind of a natural. And then that was, you know, right when, you know, Coach Saban was kind of taking hold and building that program into a juggernaut, which it is today. So I think Alabama has been one, just kind of looking and reading, and Coach Toomey and I, were very fortunate, the Loyola coach. We went down there in 2013 and were able to spend a couple of days down there, and Coach Saban was great. I didn't spend a whole lot of time with him because they were in preseason camp, but his support staff couldn't have been, you know, nicer and more gracious to us, just, you know, sitting on meetings and watching practice and talking to people, and just learned a lot about a successful culture and, you know, how they run their organization and things that they value. So, you know, again, taking maybe one of the most successful, you know, organizations in sports and listening and kind of taking some of that in, and had a chance through a good friend of mine, John Gordon, who I played with in college, who's written the Energy book and so many other great book, or Energy Bus, excuse me, and so many other really good books based on just team building and approach to life and the mindset. He got me hooked up down at Clemson. So I spent a couple days down there, and felt like those two experiences among some of the reading that we've done as a group, just seeing, you know, two different approaches, but two really successful approaches. You know, we're able to take some of those things back and some of the things you learn from your stops along the way, like at Navy, and obviously learn from great people like, you know, Jeff Long and Coach Mead. You know, there's so many things that we were able to kind of put in there, and then you kind of come up with your core values, and then the hardest thing is not letting things chip away from that culture and trying to stay true to that culture, but realizing you're dealing with young people and young people that are 18 to 22, just much like me. We sometimes attack that culture in ways we don't realize.
Right.
We just, you know, we're young, you know, and sometimes we don't always do the hard wrong over the easy right. You know, we'll sometimes take that easy wrong. And, you know, and it's like, all right, well, I'll just do this. It's easier. And they take a shortcut. And again, I was just as guilty. And good coaches hold you accountable. They don't let you do it, not because they're penalizing you, but because they care about you. And sometimes that doesn't make sense when you're 18 to 22 years old. It just doesn't. So, you know, you kind of have to stay true to some of those things. You're trying to be consistent, but you also realize every situation is a little bit different. You can't be equal, but I do think you can be fair. I think if the kids know you have their best interests in heart and you also are trying to maintain the success of the organization, you know, and you explain why you're doing what you're doing, I think it's digested a little bit better, even though, you know, guys may not agree with it. And I don't think it's your job as a head coach to try to have your kids understand you exactly when they're 18 to 22. I know for me, it took me some time to kind of get on that same wavelength and go, now I understand. And they probably shouldn't understand, but they're banking on you going, all right, this is what we're doing. I'm not sure why. But you know what, coaches, you know, got a method to his madness. So you hope they have faith in what you're doing, and we'll give it their best.
All right, Coach, I want to talk a little bit about that 2017 run. And I was telling Coach before, Coach Dane, that the first time I saw that team, or a lot of the key ingredients, was Rambo's freshman year. And you guys were hosting Cornell. And I can't remember. I don't even know if it was a fall ball game or if it was a regular game. I can't quite remember, but it was Rambo's first year, and I was new to lacrosse. My son had only played a couple years, so we brought him and some of his teammates. And I looked and I said, who's that chubby kid over there? He plays attack? What's his deal? And, of course, he ends up becoming one of the best players in the world, and was, I think, one of the more highly recruited guys in his class at that time. I just was ignorant. Can you tell us your first time that you laid eyes on Matt Rambo? Where were you? How old was he? Where did you see him? Was it film? Was it reputation? How did Matt Rambo end up at Maryland?
Yeah, and you can imagine with a name like Rambo, you know, coming up, you heard about this guy, and he was a young phenom, and you know, you heard about this kid from Philly, and you know, I remember going, I think one of the first memories I had was Jake Reed played at Maryland, had a camp, this blue chip camp that he held at UMBC. And it was a brilliant idea. He was able to, because he was a sole entity. He wasn't college coach. So he could invite, you know, the best 100 players that he could find, and just talking to different people and talking to coaches. Hey, I need your best guys. I want the 100 best players at this age level. And it started off with the rising seniors, and it became juniors and sophomores, and it got to freshmen. But he tried to, at each level, get the best 100 players he could get. And it became this thing where, like, hey, that's where you needed to go. If you were going to be an elite player, like, you were beating down the door to get in this thing. And Matt, I remember seeing Matt at the blue chip camp, and probably, you know, and that camp doesn't exist anymore. But for a while there, that was the best one. And Matt probably put on the best performance at that camp I had ever seen. You know, the kids are there about 4 days. They're doing about 3 sessions a day. And he just dominated. And he was a guy that was big, strong, skilled, powerful. You know, guys just could not stop him. So he put himself, you know, at the kind of the very top of that class. And sometimes guys can't maintain that. But I think that was Matt's freshman year. And Matt still maintained that level over the next 3 years. And you could plug it in. You went to see Matt play. You were going to get, you know, 5 to 7 points. And it could have been a variety of ways. It could have been lefty, righty. It could have been more assists than goals. But he was a producer, a consistent producer. And again, as a guy, other people got as big as him, or at least physically matured with him, it didn't matter. And some guys are those big guys that when everybody catches up, they're not successful. Matt still was that guy. And he's got this deceptive speed that people don't realize. He gets a step on guys and you don't know how. And once he gets that step, he's so powerful, it's hard to take him off his line. We got in line like everybody else and did our best. And I think the one thing we did with Matt is we didn't play any games with him. When we got the opportunity to have discussions, you know, whether it's financially or what we were going to do, we put it all out there. It was very transparent. There was no deadline. There was no pressure. We told him we want him and we wanted him when he was ready and when it was best for his family. So we kept a very consistent approach to his recruiting. And I think he appreciated that. We let him be him. We did everything we could to kind of make sure he knew, but it was authentic. There was no BS. Hey, here's why we want you. Here's what we think Maryland can do for you. This is why you're a great fit. Meet the guys, make sure you feel comfortable academically. Here are the things that we think, as a university, but also our alums and our mentors can help you after you graduate. We want to make sure we can get you anything that you want. You tell us what you're looking for and we'll see if we can make that happen. And I think he appreciated the fact that it was authentic. It was sincere. There was no BS. And that's how we've been, ever since then. The 4 years was the same way. You know, we challenged Matt. We held him accountable. We loved him and hugged him when he needed it. And to this day, I texted him. He and Colin today were trying to work on a Zoom with a young guy named Finn Crimmins who lives in Kensington. Finn is a guy we met through Team Impact, which is a program where you get connected with a young person, boy or girl, that's dealing with a childhood illness. And Finn, we met, she's way back in, I think, 2015, and we've maintained the relationship. So we're trying to set up a Zoom with him. So I was actually texting Matt today, and we still are super tight. I love him to death. I'm so proud of him. He's a great success story. He's probably the best player in the world right now. Man, the way he's doing it, just in terms of what he does with young people and the way he's, and just such a great ambassador for the game. I'm really proud of him.
Go ahead, Dane.
I was just saying that, as far as the attitude that he played with, because he scored, I think, maybe 7 or 8 goals in high school against my high school team that I was coaching at the time in the state Final Four. But he's from Philly, playing with that edge. I'm sure he brought that, and I know you guys do a good job in Philly, but he's not just a good lacrosse player, a great lacrosse player, the character and like the toughness and grit. And you hear him mic'd up in the PLL now, playing with a little bit of swag. What was that like? Because he's got a lot of personality, but I'm sure that played into being a lot of fun to coach too. And he's in those 4 years at Maryland.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Matt's got great passion. He's a guy that I think what you love about Matt is what you see is what you get with Matt. And whether you like it or not, he's going to be himself. And if you know him, you love him. He's authentic. He loves his family, loves his friends. He loves Philadelphia. So I'm a Giants fan. I grew up in New York. It's been tough lately, and he's made sure that he reminds me of that. And it's all in good fun. But he loves Philly, and to me, it's so genuine. It's so cool, how prideful he is from where he's from, and he's never forgotten that. And just like any, our kids that are from D.C., they love this area. They love the DMV. They love the Skins. It's so cool to see the Caps and Nats do well. Like, we're all going to be prideful of the teams, that kind of represent where we're from, and Matt's no different. What we loved about Matt, and an interesting story to talk about Matt, I was really impressed with him. He's got that edge, and we want those guys with that edge. Now, we don't want to be emotional, but we want to play with emotion. And I remember going to a fall tournament where you can imagine Matt, like, every time we went out, every defensive guy that matched up against Matt was like, okay, I got Matt Rambo. I can make a name for myself. Mm-hmm. And listen, he was going to get everybody's best shot. And if Matt had success, there was some frustration, right? And so guys with the big sticks made sure that you know, they try to be physical. You know, we all watched kind of the Bad Boys with Detroit Pistons.
Right.
Everybody has watched the Jordan special last few, you know, weeks. They've been awesome. Matt took a lot of hits, and there was one tournament. We were all there to watch Matt in the fall. It was up in Philly, and some guy cheap shotted Matt, and Matt was mad and understandably mad. He got up, and the easy thing to do was to turn around and basically take a swing at him, and Matt didn't. And I couldn't have been more impressed. Like, you could tell he wanted to do it, and he didn't. And I remember talking to him maybe the next day, and I said, you know what? You impress a lot of people with that self-discipline. Like, you could have been emotional. You could have done something dumb, and that might have hurt you. But, man, oh, man, you had enough poise to gather yourself and just say, you know what? It's not worth it. And I thought that was just, to me, I was even more excited to recruit Matt because he wasn't just this guy who goes rogue. There was a lot of thought that went into things. So he helped change the Maryland program forever and do something that, you know, we hadn't been able to do. And even to your point, like that class as freshmen in 2014, a lot of those freshmen played because we needed them to. And they took some lumps, but they learned and they grew and we stayed with them. And man, oh man, we were able to reap the rewards of that for the next 3 years. So that class we were super thankful for, and obviously the classes around them. But those guys, so many of them played, that, you know, and it was that senior year that we got over the top, and, you know, certainly would have liked to have gotten there a little bit earlier. But, you know, we're thankful for the accomplishment we were able to get in 17.
When you remember and you look back at that, do you remember the final game the most, or is there another game leading up to it that jumps at you more?
That year, it's funny. I tell everybody when the season starts and the year goes by fast too, but once January hits, it's like a train that leaves the station.
Right.
And you're going 100 miles an hour. You really do. You got practice every day. You still have some recruiting. You're done with practice. You're watching film. You know, you're getting in the office, you know, you're taking care of your daily activities and all the other things that you need to do. But you're getting ready for practice, and it's, you know, it's day after day, and you're moving fast. You're, you know, inputting game plans, and you're looking at your roster, and, you know, you're working on your depth chart, and you're looking at schemes, and the season just flies by. And all of a sudden, before you know it, it's like a month's gone by. And then all of a sudden you're in the conference play. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, my God, the NCAA tournament's here. And then the Final Four's here. And then when it's over, it's like the conductor hits the brakes. You pulled in the station and you got to leave. And obviously everybody wants to win that last game, but it's tough that last day, win or lose.
Right.
Because you've spent so much time with these guys. And, you know, you're even, especially the seniors, you've seen them come in as a wide-eyed freshman, and now all of a sudden, you know, they're leaving, and you're not going to be around them every day, and you're not going to see their smiling faces. And, yeah, we get connected with them. You know, it's hard not to. So it's even when we won that year, there was a sad feeling, just knowing that it's over. Like, you know, yeah. Matt, he still stops by, but you're not with them on a daily basis. So you learn as an older coach to value every day, and make sure you enjoy every day. And that's probably what makes right now so hard.
Right.
You know, because this season got cut short, and it's not just the games. It's the relationships, that time investment, you know, it's those days with each other, and we're not getting that back. You know, we're going to make the best of what we have. There are bigger problems and bigger challenges people are facing. But for what we do, yeah, it's the best of what we do.
All right, real quick before we let you go, Coach, you've been so gracious with your time. I wanted to give you an opportunity to touch on Brendan Looney and what he's meant to you. I'm a DeMatha guy, very loyal to DeMatha. He meant a lot to us, and he meant a lot to the lacrosse world, his family. Just give a little, I don't know, story or something about Brendan that has impacted you and still does to this day.
Yeah, you know, obviously I'm wearing my Brendan Looney shirt today. One of my several colors. Kevin, the dad's been awesome. You know, I got a nice assortment of shirts, so I appreciate that. And You know, you talk about those relationships and the people, and you know, you're supposed to be teaching the players things. I think Brendan Looney taught all of us a lot more than we ever taught him. I think, you know, things I think about with Brendan, you know, here's a guy we were recruiting, you know, his younger brothers like crazy. You know, they get to Maryland and Brendan walks in the office and, you know, was talking to the coaches and, hey, I really want to play lacrosse. And we're like, great. What position do you play? He's like, well, I've never really played before. you know, but I feel like I can help. I feel like I can figure it out. And, you know, looking at Coach Meade and going, you know, Brendan, like, we're actually pretty good, you know, like they're just kind of picking up a stick, like doesn't really work that way, you know, and, but he was Brendan Looney, and enough people just talked about just what a great guy was, how hard he worked. And Brendan was able to sell himself, you know, he's like, listen, just give me a chance. And so early on, Brendan, as you'd expect, a guy that didn't really know all the rules, didn't really understand everything about the game. Stick work was way behind. You'd see him every day on that wall working. You'd see him going hard every day in practice. His leadership during those runs in Navy, especially in 2004 when we went to the championship, you know, Brendan scored any goals that year, but he was a huge part of that team. He went from a guy that hadn't played to now all of a sudden is playing in every game, physical, tough leader, a guy that guys rallied behind. You know, if guys weren't really focused at practice, he'd be on the sideline. He'd just look at the guys and just go, hey, didn't have to yell, didn't have to call any name. He'd just yell, hey, and the guys would all of a sudden get refocused. And that was just Brendan. Like, you wanted to follow him. He was made of all the right stuff. You know, he's a guy that, you know, even today, you know, there's a number of us that go over and we take part in Reefs Across America. And if you haven't done that and you live in the area, I highly recommend it. For all the tough things that are going on in our country, that event in December every year, for everybody that gets up on a Saturday morning, and usually it's rainy and snowy, to lay down the Reefs over in Arlington, there's a lot of good in this country, and we see that on display. We see that, you know, based on the people that gave their lives, but we see that in the people that sacrifice their time during the holidays to make sure that, you know, we remind them they haven't been forgotten. And stopping by Brendan and seeing him every year is really important. And I usually see, you know, whether it's, you know, his widow or his family or friends, we all get to see him there. So he's never going to be forgotten. You know, and he's truly a hero. And we talk about the word hero, and sometimes maybe we use it too liberally. Not in this case. You know, he's a hero, and again, he's impacted so many of us. And you know, I'm thankful for all the relationships that I've had with my players, but I'm certainly thankful for what he's done for our country, but also the impact he's had on me. So that's kind of a short synopsis on that. And I'm still on a group text with a bunch of the Navy folks, and Billy and Steve are on there. And, you know, those guys, you know, Stevie's at Harvard now. You know, we joke that he can't spell Harvard, but he's at Harvard. You know, and Billy's still serving, and those guys still have that great personality, but they still got that same drive. We all ran the Marine Corps Marathon last year together. Stevie and I together a lot. I think he was feeling sympathy for the old guy than I am, and you know, humored me a little bit. So maybe I didn't run it. I finished it.
Still pretty impressive, Coach.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, so we got it done. It wasn't pretty, that's for sure.
Very impressive. Well, listen, you've been so gracious again with your time. Thank you so much. That's Coach Tillman. Coach, if people want to follow you on Twitter or Instagram, I mean, obviously it's Maryland Lacrosse. What are the exact Twitter profiles?
Yeah, Coach Tillman 1 is the – I kind of learned the Twitter thing and Instagram. And I've realized how important it is, you know, for our fans and people who love lacrosse and our recruits and things like that. So we try to have some fun with it. We try to keep people updated on things we're doing and highlight some great things that, you know, maybe our alums are doing, but also, you know, maybe some of our kids. So we try to have some fun with it for sure. And some of social media may not be the best thing, but I think there's some great things about social media if you use it the right way.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's Coach Dane Smith. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram. I'm EB Junkies, the same. Spread the word for us. Can't wait to do it again next week. Coach, thank you so much. We really appreciate
Coach,
it.
You're the man.
For Dane Smith,
thank you.
I'm Eric Bickle. We will see you next time. Be safe out there, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network
from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.